much unless you put your ear real close to the ground. But things kind of stink in China as well. We're all one friggin' world. We can't kind of live in isolation. And China is not the big boo-boo guy. You know, we kind of pulled the same nonsense with Japan, that Japan was going to buy up the entire United States, and they actually won World War II, but you know, 40, 50 years later. And then their economic boom crashed, and now they're you know, a fragment of what they once were. You know, we could find other manufacturers. India is more than willing and has lots of cheap labor. Vietnam, Malaysia, there's an endless series of South Asian countries that are more than happy to tool up. I think Apple is looking into manufacturing the iPhones in India instead of China. So, you know, no one's special in this life, especially China. Although if you listen to their nonsense, it sounds as though they've invented everything.
I agree with you. I know what's going on in China, and they're having a lot of problems, but you've got to realize they're a communist system. You're told what to do. I mean, you can't even spit on the floor. They watch you everywhere you go. You got to carry your ID. It's not as free like the United States. So the government could care less. Here in the United States, just like yesterday, they had protests against what Trump did with the parade. We still have a democracy, and we can still speak up. You know, try to do what we're doing right here on ham radio in China. You can't just have a free-wheeling conversation. But what's really scary is this. Yeah, we may be able to beat them at their own game and buy stuff from another country, but if they're pushed into a corner, Roy, and this is the same thing I say about Putin or Russia, you push any of these countries, you know, communist countries, dictatorships into a corner, they got the ultimate weapon, nuclear weapons. Hey, I don't know. All right. We're getting off the topic, but that's why I am concerned. You're right. Nobody will win. Nobody will win a trade war or a global war. But at the same time, which country can absorb more pain? That's the question. And I think China, their people, will do whatever they're told. Okay? Maybe they will uprise. Look what happened in 1989 when they uprised over there. They brutally put it down, Roy.
Yeah, and it's not particularly because they're communists, because that's just a label people use for conveniences like democracies and other things. It's a tyranny. It's a tyranny of a collection of party members. And yeah, there's no freedom there. You know, I mean, Russia, there's been very little to no freedom there, too. There's a lot of tyrannies out there. And I don't know, you can't just kind of bend to tyrannies, but you can't isolate yourself. You can't wall yourself up. Every so often, countries tried it. Japan walled up their country. And when the boats came into the port, they were screwed, because they were still dealing in 200 or 300 year old technology. So you got to be a member of the world. I mean, it's a dangerous place, but if you hide behind your bed, then you know you have a real crappy life. But yeah, I mean, this is really politics, and I, you know, you keep it for the political net. You know, after 1207.
Roy, it may be political, but technology and politics come to play. Yeah, communism, socialism, it's a label, but it's a political system. And I think our system is the best. That's why we've had the best standard of living, because we all can do, you know, when we're born, we're not told you got to be a machinist or whatever. We can go throughout life and do whatever. At the end of the day, I would love to. I'll take the United States over almost anywhere else. Yeah, it's nice to go to Europe and visit Greece. I spent a summer in Greece, spent time over there. It's nice, but still, when you come back to the U.S. All right, Roy.
I know we got off the topic, but this always gets me. I happen to agree with Trump to some extent, not completely, but at the same time, you know, we try to sell a car into Europe and they won't take our cars. Go to Europe. You'll never see an American car. You don't see many cars in Europe. They have all kinds of tariffs. We always had cheapness. And we always had the ability to buy. Look, we could buy an HT for $35. Okay, that's so cheap. But now, you know, you're able to buy stuff from China, shipped to you directly, and as long as it was on, you didn't have to declare it. You try to sell China something, they put all types of things on. Trade has to be equal, I think. If you're going to have very low tariffs on the U.S. side, then it's got to be on the other side, too. That's all I'm W.W. Very interesting conversation, Roy.
Okay, Howard. We'll table the discussion for now. I mean, you know, you could spend weeks, if not months, if not years, discussing economics and investment and global markets and all manner of things. But you know, we're not going to solve those problems here. So thanks, Howard, for joining us in this. But you know, I think we should move back. Wesley, I'm in a sticky situation. David, I think, would really like to ask a question. He sent me an email and said, you know, email me when it's my turn. And we got maybe about 15 minutes, and I think you got something like four or five more subjects. So I don't know how we're going to squeeze everything into this small space of time.
Yeah, thanks, Ian. Yeah, Echolink wasn't working very well, so some of the comments we couldn't hear. But anyhow, I'm on the radio right now. I mean, it's really up to you. I love when the discussion gets people involved. I have so many interesting things to talk about it. We know that the question of the gentleman is going to take 3 minutes, 5 minutes. Then I could continue at least for 10 minutes. So let me know what you decide, and to actually.
I don't know what kind of a question David has. David, if you're out there, I got the feeling that he turned his radio off and he's waiting for me to email him. David, if you're out there. Let me send him an email.
Okay, so I'm going to continue with the next one. I'm going to try to speed up. FRA, four functions for hams. We have everything in one device, but nothing is perfect. We have four different devices. It's a Chinese combine, or in Europe, combine, which is the machine that does everything but doesn't do anything right. However, it's not bad. So we recalled down of ENA. It was good because of the price. So now we have a FinRC DPOS 350P, and it is 350 megahertz dual channel digital phosphor oscilloscope, 50 megahertz functional generator, 200 kilohertz to 350 megahertz spectrum analyzer, and 50 megahertz frequency response analyzer. And the battery is 3.7 volts, 8,000 amp hour. A lithium battery, 7 inches color screen. It looks beautiful. I'm telling you, it looks beautiful. 1024 by 600 pixels resolution and total power consumption 10 watts. So this is good. Apart from that, it's total BS. But the total BS does the job. So if somebody wants to spend $299.35, or sometimes $318, or $350, or maybe because of the kink tariffs, you pay more, it's still worth it. For comparison, I'm going to give you the 6 GHz Keysight DSOX6004A is $62,000, which has similar stuff. And we will compare it to another one, also Keysight, but I don't remember the... But anyhow, we're talking about $33,000 versus $600 for Chinese crap. And yes, I'm sure that this Chinese crap, for most of the people, will do the job. Dr. Roy, for your comment, and if you allow me, I go to the next one.
Okay, David sent me another email that indicated his displeasure and that he wasn't going to respond tonight. Anyway, everyone's a critic. For people who are doing things not professionally, who don't need the sharpest, shiniest, highest spec stuff in the world, and who, you know, want a little toy to play with, like our Nano VNA and our Spectrum SA and such, that's not as good as the industrial stuff, then that's great, that's fine. And they're not kind of losing a market to the big industrial companies, because they have different customer bases. People who buy a Nano VNA are not guys working at an electronics lab in some major designer. You know, the guys over at Apple are not using Nano VNAs to test their equipment that they're working on. So, yeah, no harm, no foul. I don't mind inexpensive products not really based on high-tech sales. They're serving a completely different market, and they're not inhibiting them. I tend to be very annoyed with the Chinese manufacturers in that they flood places like Amazon and Alibaba with really cheap stuff, and it obviously kills the market for higher quality stuff. You know, I used to have a humidifier that was made in Switzerland that cost, I don't know, $300. Nowadays, you can pick up an Amazon web page and get a humidifier for $35. So they pretty much killed the European humidifier market. And if you want a Swiss humidifier, you can't get it because that company either went out of business or changed what they manufacture. So that's a big problem. I don't know how you solve that problem, but it's an annoying thing for me. But, you know, as far as these inexpensive toy calibration tools, I think they're pretty much a godsend. Otherwise, a lot of us out there would not have VNAs. I happen to have a rig expert, but you know, a lot of people don't want to spend $300-$400 for a VNA. They'll spend $100. That's about it, and that's what nano VNA market is.
Thank you very much, Dr. Roy, for your comment. As far as Dave disappointed beyond time at 8 p.m. I'm sorry. And reserve your place, and then you can say that you are appointed disappointment that or satisfied with that. But anyhow, let me go to the next one. We're talking about concrete. Yes, concrete for cams. So talking about the concrete, quickly. We use it for many ham radio structures. So if we dig square hole 5 feet deep and 20% larger than per side than the tower footprint, position the whole distance of 1.5 times the height of the tower from any structures, we think it's gonna last, and most likely it's gonna last. But then we have a problem to understand the compression, contraction, and tension expansion of the concrete. So there is a need to at least recall contraction effects or some of the features of the concrete, and I'm trying to just precise and concise but fast. So we have a strengthening concrete, a prevention of cracking and enhanced load distribution. And we may point at some good things about the concrete, which would be water cement ratio, curing condition, porosity and cement content, and temperature. Those things we can control. But then we have something that is not necessarily known. Concrete can become stronger over time, and the factors influence water-cement ratio and curing conditions, porosity, and cement content. So we may think that the concrete is going to last, it's going to have durability, longevity, low cost, and customizability. And we think that if we buy from Home Depot concrete, we may be satisfied. Well, not always it's the truth. Sometimes we are not pleasantly surprised by disadvantages of using concrete, and that would be low tensile strength. So if we compress the concrete, it's perfectly good. But for the tensile strength, it's not really very good. So we use either rebar to reinforce the concrete, or we have a long beam made from the concrete with the holes, horizontal holes in it, and we put the metal rod inside, and we use the screws or hydraulic way we try to squeeze it. If I remember correctly, the concrete changes its diameter, depends from the temperature, about 100 of a millimeter, which is quite a lot, because if we're talking that 1 meter is 3 feet, then if we take 10 meters or 20 meters, we're really dealing with a big problem. Let me drop. Okay. And sometimes we think that we have a crack because of expanding concrete and shrinking concrete. No, we have a crack mostly because of the water and humidity, water in the concrete. And when it freezes, we're talking about the ability to expand of frozen water in the concrete, and that's how it cracks. So it is good sometimes to at least recall a few things from the old time when you were interested in something that is concrete. Dr. Roy, any comment of yours? Let me go further.
No, not much to say on that.
Okay. This is for Dr. Roy. I'm not a chemist. Citric acid and salt for hams. That means there is an easy way to make at home a mixture that allows you to clean from the rust your antenna parts or your metal hardware. Dr. Roy.
I mean, there's a lot of household chemistry that's used as cleaning agents, degreasing agents, acids, oxidizers, reducing agents, all kinds of fun stuff. What comes in very dangerously, happens to a lot of people eventually, is they get this brilliant idea of mixing bleach with ammonia, which produces chlorine gas and kills people. So every so often, very, very fastidious cleaners who discover this amazing, very good cleaning agent, but deadly. So there's a lot of chemistry that produces, different degreasing agents and cleaning agents, stuff to kind of break up oxidation, corrosion, and what have you. You know, you could do a simple Google search, and there are a lot of household hints where you could pull together stuff under your kitchen sink, mix it up with good ventilation, and do amazing things.
Thank you very much for that. For Paul and Roy, we had an interesting discussion with Dr. Roy, a Texas startup making history with revolutionary rocket engine. And Dr. Roy said a few words, and I agree with him, but we have something that he didn't take into consideration, and I would love if Dr. Roy say a few words and Paul say a few words about it. Dr. Roy.
What did I miss? I mean, basically, you know, Wesley brings things like this almost every week. Inevitably, there's a couple of chuckleheads with a couple of degrees out there and some credentials, and they have a startup research and development organization based on a concept that's usually 30, 40 years old and never panned out, but they know how to make it work. And they put most of their initial money into some poor schlep who builds a CGI movie of their rocket engine or whatever they have flying into outer space. But in the end, all they have is the CGI graphics. They never have a actual working model, God forbid. At that point, they finally liquidate the research and development, and they go on to some other nonsense. So for every research and development investment firm, probably out of 1,000, maybe 2 of them turn a profit. And I think this is another example. And it's the weirdest YouTube I ever heard, because they mentioned the guy who is the owner of the company who made himself president, and he made, of course, his wife vice president. And we had to know that his wife, Sassy, couldn't make it to her grandmother's birthday. What that has to do about rocket engine engineering, I have no idea.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Wright. I love your comments. Excellent. There is another even more excellent comment of yours that you sent me, but I'm not sure if we have enough of time. But here's the time for Paul to respond. Actually, that rich kid or whoever he is, he made the test. He did send the racket, and he showed it. Anyhow, I love your comment. Now, talking about rotating the detonation engine, we have 10, 11, 12, 16. 16 positions that I sent you, and that's Venus Aerospace, that's GE Aerospace, that's DARPA, that's U.S. Navy, Aerojet Rocketdyne, we have Russian, we have a Purdue University, University of Central Florida, U.S. Air Force, and Japan Air Force Exploration Agency, all of them, and many others, all of them, Pratt & Whitney, that's the historical manufacturer. It's a beautiful, beautiful entity, and even though they conducted the test, and University of Washington. So, one more guy wanted to be like them. Let me drop. One more guy wanted to be like them. He wanted to waste the money, or spend the money, or make something, or maybe just make others think that he made something, even if he made BS. It doesn't matter. It's the matter that he is trying. And trying is, for me, the value. I wonder what Paul would love to say about it. Paul.
Yeah, I watched the YouTube, the Venus company. And yeah, he talked it up. He sounds like a good salesman, you know. But I still didn't see any diagrams. I didn't see any. It's YouTube. They could have had a couple of pictures on what the inside of this looked like. You know, he did show, oh, I'm going to attach it to the front end of the of a ramjet, and that's going to be it. Well, you know, how does it work? You know, there's been a couple of companies that have done similar things, like experiments like that. But no, I don't think anything's going to get to orbit anytime soon. But oh yeah, he was going to change everything. He was going to fly it to Europe in an hour and a half and all, you know. But, you know, I could say that, you know, I have a gravitational machine, and it's going to make me just take off without anything. I'm just going to push this button, and it's going to work. But, you know, I think you're supposed to show to work when you make statements like that. So I don't think I'd put any money into it. Although the wife's birthday, I mean, when I saw that, I was ready to, you know, second more. And really go in, you know, 100%. But, yeah, that was the funny part. I did see that. Back to you, Wes.
Yeah, we don't have the time to go deeper into it, but it is 25% more efficient than conventional combustion engine. And, they at least think that it could be employed in other applications like air travel, and even in vehicles, but whatever. Not enough to talk about it. The next one. We just teleported light, and of course Dr. Roy is right. So I'm going to read the title. We just teleported light, and it stayed that way for 30 hours. Dr. Roy is right about the wording being used, but we had a difference of opinions in whether this is something significant or it is not. Dr. Roy, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's slightly significant, but is it revolutionary? Is anyone going to get a Nobel Prize? No. Is anyone going to make a zillion dollars? No. You know, the problem is it's ultimately the terrible physicists have no imagination for words. They reuse words, they misuse words, and it confuses everyone. You know, the electrons have quantum spin. But almost everyone you ask thinks that electrons have mechanical spin, like they're little billiard balls and they spin, but they don't, because it's not the same thing. It's a quantum aspect. It's not a mechanical aspect, but because physicists decided to annoy everyone by calling it quantum spin, we're stuck with that. Same thing with damn teleportation. The average person you ask, what is teleportation, and they tell you Star Trek. You go into this room, and they say energize, and you sparkle, and then you sparkle into another place. That's teleportation. Well, not according to quantum entanglement. Teleportation in quantum mechanics is simply sending information from point A to point B without moving anything around, without the source of the information going anyplace. That's not what anyone else thinks teleportation is. So, in fact, what they really meant to explain is they figured a way of putting a entangled photon in a fiber optic stream and send the photon across the fiber optics for a couple of hours without disentangling. That's nice. What is it really going to get you? I don't know, and neither do they. You know, the problem is that supposedly quantum entanglement happens instantaneously, but quantum information theory suggests that you can't transfer information instantaneously. You can only exchange it the fastest at the speed of light in a vacuum. So the problem is that entangled particles will spontaneously disentangle, and they won't give you any indication. So the information that you get from an entangled a particle will suddenly give you random nonsense, and you don't know when and you don't know how, so you need some way of judging, of copying the original, which delays the signals being sent. So it's all kind of, gazing into your belly button.
And Paul, would you mind to express your opinion?
I did not see that one, but the teleport topic is always very, very interesting. I think we got a long way before that actually happens, before you move anything from one space to another. And nothing in between. It's just going to, like, magically appear in somewhere else. I think we got a long wait. Like, maybe never. Back to you, Wes. Good topic, though. Very interesting.
Yeah, well, I was trying to put my 5 cents into the discussion, saying that it is something significant, at least from the point of view that it was done with photons for the first time since 1967. It's not for the first time, but at least, okay. And yes, it cannot be used for faster than light communication to date. Right. Okay. We're not going deep into it, quantum entanglement. Why more? Self-driving vehicle on fire in Greta Thunberg. Talking about progress in technology, the recent incident involving Waymo self-driving vehicles that were vandalized and set on fire have been a result of violent protests in Los Angeles. But that proves that electronic circuitry in them was designed to stop vehicles despite unusual circumstances. And if there is a human body in line, that is, of course, more fragile than a bunch of metal. That is important. So surprisingly good is to know that damage created to the circuitry didn't make the cars rapidly drive itself into the crowd. So that was good. But anyhow, talking about kidnapping Greta. It doesn't matter what we think about Greta Thunberg. Doesn't matter. She is innocent of anything in her mind. Let me drop. Greta Thunberg was kidnapped. She was kidnapped by Israeli in international space, where no jurisdiction has rights to dominate above international regulation. She was delivering food for free. She didn't murder anybody. She is the way that she is. She is a motivated person for the green, and everything that is green is in her mind. But I would love to hear opinion of Dr. Roy and to actually it.
Well, again, we seem to land in politics, and this is going to be the last item tonight, Wes, because otherwise the SpaceNet report will go on at 11:30. I have a lot of problems with the Israeli government and Netanyahu, and I think that was not the right thing to do. I was not surprised that they did it, because they've done far worse. They're treating Greta a lot better than they're treating little children, in Gaza. I don't know what to tell you. It's an insurmountable problem that's not even being attempted to be fixed. Bibi is just basically killing everyone that annoys him. And he seems to be doing a great job of it in Iran tonight.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ray. It's up to you. We you have only one subject, and that's you, not me, about Japanese scientists that develop artificial blood that can be used for patients of any blood type, and that might be important to the ham radio community that is mostly older guys. But if you want to talk about it next week, that's fine with me. Back to you.
Yeah, we can do it next week. There's been research on artificial blood for 20-odd years. And again, this is not a done deal. This is first going into clinical evaluation. So, you know, who knows if it's going to pan out or not. But we can do it next week.
Thank you very much, and I do very much appreciate for the time given to me, Dr. Roy, and the audience, and to Exxon Clear.
Okay, very good, Wes. Thank you for your participation, all you do here. And now, I'm sorry, Paul, that it took this long, but now it's Paul, WS2N, with the SpaceNet Report.
Very good, boy. No problem. AC2GS, WS2N for the SpaceNet Report for the TechNet. And, yeah, okay, and everything. By the way, I'm a big Greta fan. She's great. I haven't heard from her in a while. I was wondering what happened to Greta. Anyway, the concrete story, by the way, just 28 days, and you're good to go. Put the concrete down and wait exactly 28 days. That's the curing time. Although it keeps curing after that, but that's the time when you're allowed to do things. You look at these forms that they put in, if they're going to put up streetlights somewhere, if they put the concrete in, and you live nearby, you could almost time it. Look at your calendar, and 28 days later, they'll come back and they'll put the light post in. It's a standard operating procedure. So, you're going to put your tower in, 40-foot tower or something. Wait a month, and you're good to go after the concrete's been poured. First thing I want to talk about is the Axiom flight that was supposed to go up to the International Space Station. There's four people that are going to be on that. One person from Poland, another one from Hungary, another one from India, and the commander of the flight will be Peggy Whitson. Peggy has been up to the space station a number of times. She's got more logged hours than I think almost any American. But she no longer works for NASA. She's retired from NASA. But she works for Axiom now. So this will be her second flight up doing this. NASA won't allow somebody to dock with the International Space Station unless they either are, you know, working with NASA or, you know, or maybe an actual NASA astronaut. So that was supposed to go up. It's been delayed one time because of weather, and now another time because of oxygen leaks that they need to repair. And now the International Space Station has put them on an indefinite hold due to air leak inside the International Space Station. The back of the space station back module is called Zesder, or Bezda, starts with a Z. You know, Zesder module, has a docking adapter behind it at the very end of it, and that's one of the docking ports that Russia uses for attaching their vehicles when they come, either a cargo vehicle or a crew vehicle. And when they attach, they naturally open up both hatches. There's an inner hatch to the space station, and then there's the actual hatch on the progress vehicle or cargo vehicle. So there's two hatches. But in between, they call it a vestibule. There's a space in between. And somewhere in that space, for the last 5 years, they've had a very slow leak, losing air. Now, on the International Space Station, you have air similar to what we're breathing here, minus the argon, you know, the same proportions of oxygen and nitrogen. But they've measured this exactly, and they know that it's been around a pound of air per day that they lose. The only problem is it's up to 2 pounds. Now, they're able to actually spend months or many, many months at a time without losing any air because, let's say, a Progress cargo vehicle attaches to it. They open up both doors, they unload everything. What they do is they close both doors. Both the hatches are now closed. And sure, eventually you're going to create a vacuum in that vestibule area, but because the other doors are closed, you're not going to lose any more air from the space station. But Russians have really never been able to define exactly where it is or why it's happening. But now they have noticed, they've taken measurements lately, and they're losing a little over 2 pounds of air instead of 1 pound, so it's increased. Now, the Russians claim they've sealed it all up. Again, they've retested it. It seems to be okay. But that's not really good enough. I mean, you could have a crack, for instance, or a fitting, and you could actually seal it up from the inside and the outside. But because it's weak, it could be spreading, you know. And the last thing you need to do is have something spread quickly and, you know, seriously have a serious problem. But the whole thing could separate. You remember, it's 14.7 pounds of pressure inside. It's very similar to what we have here on Earth. But if you add up all those 14 pounds every inch and you line that up against the wall, you've got like, you know, 20,000 pounds of pressure pushing against, you know, a certain area, total pressure. So it's a serious problem. They want to check up on it a little bit more before they allow another crew coming add to the space station. Right now there's 7 people that would, you know, add 11 people for 2 weeks. Axiom goes up for 2 weeks, and then they go back down. They're only visiting the space station. It's a private company, Axiom. I've talked about this before on the net many times. Their goal is to eventually have their own space station. And they're ahead of the curve. They're sending up, you know, people from the company before they actually have a space station. So they're going to be put on hold, and we'll have to wait and see, if they get a chance to eventually fly in the near future. Let me just stand by and see if anybody has any comments or, you know, questions. Well, just stand by a second. WS2.
This is KE2AJU. Paul, how are you this week?
KE2AJU. Very good, Charlie. Good to hear from you. I always stand by, see if you or anybody else wants to check in. Very good. I thought you might be there. Do you have any comments before I continue?
Are these astronauts going up? Are they going to rotate anybody? And what kind of tests are they going to, perform?
Working for Axiom, they say there's like 60 different objectives that they want to accomplish. But whatever experiments they do, they will, of course, share with NASA. The Axiom company pays NASA money, actually, for these people to visit. You know, they are using up NASA supplies, NASA air, you know, NASA bathroom facilities, even some NASA food. Even so, they do bring up their own as well. And they will be doing that. They have experiments. 2 weeks, they're back down again. So it's not a rotation deal. When NASA does it with their own people, you know, they'll send up four people. They'll hang out on the space station, and you know, usually a couple of days, sometimes a week, or even more if it's let's say bad weather. So you know, they'll eventually send different four people back down, and then the other four will stay for 5 to 6 months. But this is different. This is the fourth mission of Axiom up to the space station. So they've done this before, and doing it in the future. Back to you, John.
I was just curious to find out what they were doing up there. Why were they delayed?
Yeah, that's what I was saying before. Three different times it was supposed to go up a week or so ago. They had a weather delay, then they had an oxygen problem delay in the oxygen leak, it looked like, on the rocket itself. So that delayed them. And now they're permanently delayed until NASA agrees, due to this leak that's going on the International Space Station. I was just talking about before. So until they straighten the space station out, they're not going to allow another additional four people to go up there for now. My guess is they'll probably, get approved shortly. But I think they want to make sure the temporary patch that the Russians put in hold for, longer than a day or so.
It sounds like that oxygen leak is getting worse and worse as time goes by.
Yeah, you're right. They've been playing with it for 5 years. 1 pound a day. Now they're up to 2 pounds a day. Now they sealed it. We'll see how it goes. By the way, it's a regular air leak. It's not, the astronauts are breathing the same air we are. Nitrogen, 77%, and then oxygen, 21%. The same as what we breathe here, except they don't have the argon in their atmosphere. And 2 pounds of air, it doesn't sound like much, but let's say you were in a little room all by yourself, and there was only 2 pounds of air left in that room, you would last, I figured out one time, you would last about an hour and a half before that air ran out. So they're losing that per day. So, over a week, that would be, 7 to 10 pounds. And that would keep somebody alive for maybe, 4 or 5 hours. So, they have to replenish this when they lose it, by the way. So they do have big tanks that are attached on the outside of the Quest lab. The Quest lab is where they do an EVA. And they have these massive tanks. They hold nitrogen and oxygen and all. 97% of the air that they breathe is recycled on the space station. But, they do replace it now and then because they're still missing roughly 3%. And, of course, they're going to be losing a little bit more due to the air leak. So it's a rough idea of what's going on. with the space station. And they do bring up bottles of nitrogen and oxygen on some of the flights. And then they recharge the existing big tanks that they have on station. There you go. Let me just move on to a launch that's supposed to go up tomorrow that I'm looking forward to. It's an unmanned launch. It's an Atlas V. It's a 551 Atlas V. That means it's the heaviest version of the Atlas V with most power. Five means, you know, they have the big bearing on top. Five basically means meters, so it's roughly 16 meters in diameter. So plenty of room on, you know, for putting a payload up to space. And then the second five stands for the five big boosters that are also attached to the Atlas V. So you have, you know, they can put any number. They can put 0, 1, 2, 3. And in this case, it's their highest number, which is 5. So it's the 5-5-1. Well, the 1 stands for the, on the second stage, it has one engine, one AJ-10 engine that they use, the liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen, the second stage. And there is a version where they have two of them, but right now it's going to be flying with one. So the most powerful rocket, and the reason they need it is to launch 27 broadband satellites, not the Elon Musk, not the Starlink system, but for Amazon. Amazon, you know, Jeff Bezos and all. And he's in the process of putting multiple satellites up into space, similar to what SpaceX has done with the Starlink program. Although Starlink is up to over 7,000 satellites. Amazon has got 27 up, and now here comes another 27. So it's the second load. They don't need 7,000. They need 3,232 or something like that. A little over 3,000 satellites that Kuiper wants to put up. Kuiper is the name of the satellite system. You have Starlink, and now you have Kuiper. Kuiper is going to be flying roughly 80 missions. This is the second mission. And they have contracts with multiple companies to eventually put all these 3,000 satellites up. They have, I think, four or five more launches with the Atlas V that will be retired. But the ULA that flies the Atlas V also flies the Vulcan rocket. And Vulcan rocket has successfully already flown two times, so it looks like it's very reliable. Each launch of Vulcan will have multiple satellites on that as well, I think more than 27. And then you also have the Ariane 6 rocket that has already flown successfully, and that's built by the European Space Agency. Amazon has taken a contract out with them to fly multiple satellites in space. And also the New Glenn rocket, which is really Jeff Bezos as well. That New Glenn is flown by Blue Origin, which is owned by Jeff Bezos. So it's really launching his own satellites in that case. But between those four different rockets, he eventually will have over 3,000 satellites in space within a couple of years. So that's interesting, and they say it's supposed to be a very good system. Very good broadband system. We'll see. And from what I understand, they're not going to fall out of space that readily. Elon Musk has problems with the Starlinks, every now and then they get caught up in the atmosphere, but the atmosphere keeps expanding, especially with all the solar activity that we hams all know about. You know, outside of causing radio problems, when you have solar activity, it heats up the atmosphere, and the atmosphere itself expands, and this rarefied air gets, you know, further and further away from the Earth, and it starts to hit the very low satellites. Elon Musk has them at around 200 miles, 225, something like that. Oh, wait a minute. Let me think. Well, a couple hundred miles up, and Jeff Bezos has a contract to put them higher, maybe 50 to 100 miles higher, so he won't have the problem with the that Elon Musk has with these things falling out of the sky every now and then. Any comments? By the way, it's going to go 135. If I'm here, I'll be able to zoom in on one of their channels. I believe I don't know. I think there's three or four different websites I could probably go to watch it take off. Any comments? WS2N.
Well, no comments. No comments.
Okay, Charlie. I'm just turning on an external fan here to cool my radio off. Radio starts to cook when you keep talking. Amazing. But, just an update on the Lucy project, the mission that launched a couple of years ago, back in 21. And its mission is to eventually go out to around the orbit of Jupiter. It's not going to orbit Jupiter, but it's going to be in the orbit of Jupiter. Now, the reason for it is there's these satellites, there's these asteroids called Trojan satellites. And they're in the orbit of Jupiter. They're ahead of Jupiter in its orbit probably by, you know, 30, 40 million miles. And then there's another group of asteroids that lag behind Jupiter. And they're also called Trojan asteroids. And the goal is for Lucy to go out and visit these things, launch in 2021. They just checked a lot of the instruments on Lucy out, just as an asteroid that they used as a test, you know, for pictures and for, you know, test to make sure their spectrometers and everything work, and everything checked out okay. It's a big spacecraft. If you were to measure it, you know, from one end to the other with the solar panels open, it's roughly around 45, 50 feet. They have the solar panels they're not rectangular. It's circular. So it looks like two big round solar panel systems when they're open. You know, they open up like a pizza.
That time be complete.
Pizza. They have like 12 pieces, 12 triangles, I think it is. And they unfurl like a fan when they were launched in 2020. And they're very large in diameter. There's two of them, and each one is around 25 feet in diameter. And one of them, you know, unfurled and locked into place. But the other one didn't. It unlocked. It never grabbed. And they tried everything to make it grab, but it was only, you know, short by maybe a foot. And the engineers figured, well, we don't need it. That's okay. It could handle the thrusters and, you know, everything that it has to do. They figured it's okay. And sure enough, it's been producing, I think they said, like 98% the amount of power that it really needs. So no problem with that. If it's flying around Earth, it would have, 20,000 watts power, but because all the way out at Jupiter, for operations, in that orbit, it'll be...